Part 2. The Four Waters. Chapter 11. The Garden. Let's talk now about the ones who are beginning to become servants of love. This is exactly what happens to us, I think, when we take up the path of prayer with determination and follow He who has loved us so much. This is such a high station that the very thought of attaining it transports me with a strange exaltation. If we conduct ourselves correctly during this early stage, all insipid fears vanish. O Lord of my soul and my good, there are souls so determined to love you that they gladly abandon everything else to focus on nothing but loving you. Why don't you want them to immediately ascend to a place where they may receive the joyful gift of perfect love? Wait, I said that wrong. What I ought to be complaining about is that we ourselves don't want this grace. If we fail to reach for this state of sublime dignity, it's our own fault. Don't we realize that the perfect possession of true love of God brings every blessing with it? We are so slow and so stingy about giving ourselves completely to God. Why should His Majesty desire to give us something so precious as perfect love? We need to pay the price of rigorous self-preparation. It is clear to me that there is nothing on earth with which we could ever purchase such a divine blessing. Yet, if we do all that we can, if we avoid getting attached to worldly things and concentrate exclusively on heavenly things, as the saints have demonstrated, then I believe without a doubt that this great gift would swiftly be given to us. The problem is, we think we're giving all that we have to God when all we are offering Him is the interest or the fruit, while withholding the capital or the orchard itself. We may surrender to our poverty, and this is a good thing, but then we often obsess on having enough of what we've given up. Sometimes we even scheme about how we're going to store up some extra or cultivate relationships with people who will ensure that our needs are met. All this does is put us in a greater state of anxiety, and maybe even danger, than we suffered before we freed ourselves from bondage to our possessions. We may also renounce our self-importance when we embark on the spiritual path in pursuit of perfection. Yet the minute someone challenges our good name to the slightest degree, we forget that we have offered up our personal status to God and try to snatch it right back out of His hands, so to speak. Hadn't we just finished appointing Him Lord of our wills? This happens with everything else, too. What a charming way we have of seeking God's love. Our hands are already full of our own attachments. We make no effort to lift our affections above the earth and carry them to fulfillment, and yet we demand spiritual comforts. These two desires, the divine and the personal, strike me as being mutually exclusive. Since we are incapable of giving ourselves up whole, we will not receive the whole of the heavenly treasure. May it please the Lord to give it to us drop by drop, even if receiving it cost us all the trials in the world. Whenever God gives a person the grace and the courage to strive for this blessing with all her heart and soul, He is bestowing the greatest mercy. God does not deny Himself to anyone who perseveres. Little by little, He increases her courage, ensuring that she will reach her goal. I keep saying courage, because in the beginning, the spirit of evil erects many obstacles to prevent us from setting out on the path. The spirit of evil knows that if it lets this one soul get away, it is sure to lose many others. I truly believe that if a beginner strives, with the help of God, to reach the summit of perfection, she will not reach heaven alone, but will bring many souls home with her. Like a good captain, she will deliver everyone in her care to God. The spirit of evil creates so much chaos along the way that if the soul has any hope of not turning back, she will require not a little courage, but a lot, and plenty of help from God as well. Let's take a look at the early stages of the path. For those who are determined to pursue this blessing and emerge from this adventure victorious, the beginning is the most difficult part. The soul struggles and God responds with a flow of grace. In the more advanced degrees of prayer, our primary task is simply to enjoy God. Still, Whether we find ourselves at the beginning, middle, or final stage of our path, we all carry our crosses, even though no two crosses are alike. All who follow Christ must walk the path he walked if they don't want to get lost. Blessed be the trials that even in this lifetime are so abundantly rewarded. At this point, I'm going to have to resort to metaphor. Since I am a woman and only writing what I have been ordered to write, I hesitate to speak this way. But it is difficult to get the language of the Spirit just right, especially for someone like myself who is uneducated. And so, I will have to find some alternative means for expressing myself. It may be that my metaphors are ineffective, in which case you can use my foolishness as the opportunity for a good laugh. It seems to me that I have read or heard of this metaphor somewhere, but since my memory is so poor, I have no idea where it comes from or what it was meant to illustrate. So I am content to borrow it for my own purposes for now. Let the beginner think of herself as a gardener who is preparing to plant a garden for the delight of her beloved. But the soil is barren and full of noxious weeds. His Majesty himself pulls up the weeds and replaces them with good seed. Bear in mind that the minute the soul sets out on the path of prayer and service, God has already begun to cultivate her soil in this way. Like good gardeners, our job is to tend those plants with loving care, striving to get them to grow. We labor to water them so that they will not wither, but instead bud and bloom, emitting the most sublime fragrance and giving this Lord of ours great pleasure. This inspires him to enter often into our garden and enjoy himself amid the array of virtues. Let's see now how this garden needs to be watered. In this way, we will understand what we have to do, the price we have to pay to do it, whether the gain exceeds the cost of labor, and how long we might expect to have to work before our efforts come to fruition. It occurs to me that our garden can be watered in four ways. We can pull water up from a well. This is a lot of work. Or we can turn the crank of a water wheel and draw the water through an aqueduct. I have tried this method, and I know that it is not as labor-intensive and yields more water. Or we can channel the flow of water through irrigation ditches. This results in deeper saturation of the soil and lasts longer, which makes less work for the gardener. Or the water may come directly from an abundant rain. This is when the Lord waters the garden himself, without any effort on our part. And this is by far the most effective method of all. It is important to me to apply these four ways of watering the garden to the four degrees of prayer to which the Lord in his great kindness has sometimes raised my soul. Remember, water is the only way to maintain the garden. Without it, everything will die. May it please his goodness that I manage to speak in such a way that it might be of some use to one of the men in particular who has ordered me to write this. In 4 months, this man has made more spiritual progress than I have made in 17 years. He has prepared himself better, so without any labor on his part, his garden is watered in all four ways, although he only receives the last kind of water in drops. At this rate, you will soon be submerged. If this man finds my description amusing, he is more than welcome to laugh at me. We might say that beginners in prayer are the ones who draw water from the well. As I have mentioned, this requires a lot of labor. Accustomed to a life of distractions, they exhaust themselves trying to recollect their senses. Beginners need to practice withdrawing their attention from what they see and hear. They should sit in solitude and reflect on their past life. As I will explain later, everyone needs to spend some time thinking about her past. But the extent to which each person must do this varies. In the beginning, this kind of reflection is painful. The practitioner is not sure if she genuinely regrets her transgressions. The clearest sign of repentance is her burning desire to serve God. All she needs to do is meditate on the life of Christ, and her intellect will exhaust itself. And so, there are certain things we can do to advance on the path. But we must always remember that everything we do is with the help of God. Without His support, as everyone knows, we cannot think a good thought. This phase corresponds to fetching water from the well. May God grant that there is water in it. All we can do is our part, dipping our bucket and drawing it up to water the flowers. God is so good that if even the well is dry, He sustains the garden without water and makes our virtues flower anyway. Like good gardeners, we do whatever lies in our power and leave the rest to Him. His majesty has a purpose for everything, and this aridity may ultimately be to our advantage. What I mean here by water are tears of love longing, or at least a tenderness of interior devotion. But what happens when many days go by and all the gardener experiences is dryness, distaste, and a total lack of desire to even bother to draw water? Only the thought that what she is doing gives service and pleasure to the Lord of the garden keeps her from giving up. She needs to carefully guard whatever merits she has gained so far from the tedious labor of letting the bucket down into the well shaft and hauling it up empty over and over. Often she will find that she cannot even lift her arms for this work or come up with a single worthy notion. When I speak of trying to draw water from a well, what I mean, of course, is engaging the intellect in meditation. What then? Well, then the gardener rejoices. She is consoled and considers it an incomparable blessing to be able to work in the garden of such a great emperor. Her purpose is to please him, not herself. And knowing that her labor is pleasing to him, she praises God with all her heart. The master has confidence in the gardener because he sees that without any compensation, she so carefully tends what has been entrusted to her. Let her also help Christ to carry his cross. Let her remember that the Lord lived with this cross all his life. Do not let her ever abandon the path of prayer or seek God's kingdom here on earth. Even if this aridity lasts throughout her whole life, let her resolve never to let Christ fall under the weight of his cross. The time will come when the Lord will repay her all at once. She does not need to be afraid that her labor is going to waste. She is serving a good master, and he's keeping his eye on her. She must ignore her negative thoughts, remembering that the spirit of evil tried to use such tricks on St. Jerome in the desert. These trials take their toll. I should know. I endured them for many years, and I know how extraordinary they are. Whenever I was able to squeeze a drop of water from the sacred well, I considered it to be a mercy from God. Such labor seems to me to require more courage than many worldly tasks combined. But I have clearly seen that God does not fail to reward us generously even in this lifetime. A single hour tasting his glory more than compensates me for all the anguish I have suffered in persevering for so long in prayer. I believe that the Lord sends these trials in the beginning and many other temptations later to test his lovers. Before he is willing to lay great treasure inside us, we need to prove that we are capable of drinking from his chalice and carrying his cross. It seems to me that his majesty puts us through all this to remind us of our insignificance. The blessings he will give to us later are so exalted that he wants us first to experience our own imperfection so that what happened to Lucifer won't happen to us. Is there anything you could possibly do, my beloved, that is not for the greater good of the soul? You know that she is already yours. She places herself in your power. She will follow you wherever you go, even to death on the cross, and she is determined to help you bear that cross and never leave you alone with it. Those who see this kind of determination in themselves have absolutely nothing to fear. Spiritual people, do not be distressed. Once you have been placed in such a high state that all you really want is to leave the cares of the world behind and commune in solitude with your God, the majority of your work is done. Praise the Lord for this, and trust in his goodness. He never fails his friends. Cover the eyes of your mind and banish thoughts such as, Why has God given that person an experience of devotion after only a few days of practicing prayer and nothing to me when I have been hard at work for so many years? Let us trust that it's all for our own good. Let His Majesty lead the way along the path He chooses. We do not belong to ourselves anymore. We belong to God. He grants us an immeasurable blessing when He gives us the desire to dig in His garden and be in the presence of the Lord of the garden, who is certainly present within us. What difference does it make if He gives me water from the well to nurture some of these plants and flowers, while others thrive without it? Your will be done, O Lord. Help me never to forsake You. Whatever virtues You have, in Your great kindness bestowed on me, let them not be lost now. Since You suffered, my beloved, I am willing to suffer. Manifest Your will in me in every way, and do not give anything as precious as Your love to anyone who only serves You expecting to get something in return. I know from experience that those whose souls progress are the ones who set out on the path of contemplative prayer with determination and persuade themselves to ignore whether the Beloved is giving them the blessing of tenderness and devotion or is withholding it from them. If they succeed in detaching from self-gratification, neither rejoicing when the Lord gives them these favors nor becoming discouraged when they are taken away, they should have no fear of falling back, even when they stumble. The foundation of their building rests on solid ground. They understand that the love of God is not about tears or tenderness or relief, but serving Him with humility, fortitude, and righteousness. Otherwise, all they do is take without giving anything in return. Poor women like me, on the other hand, are weak, lacking fortitude. It seems appropriate to me that we would be led with holy favors. These gifts are leading me even now, instilling me with the strength I need to endure some of the trials God has given me to suffer.